ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानातिमिदन्तस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदन्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगनारघुनाथन्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतां सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनाबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चना गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैता गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। सो आई'd लाइक टू टॉक अबाउट अ स्टोरी फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम, अ स्टोरी दैट मे बी मेनी ऑफ अस आर फेमिलियर विद एंड परहैप्स सम ऑफ अस आरंट। It's a story that I get a lot of inspiration from. It's the story that comes from Canto 1, Chapter 6. And it's a story of Srila Narad Muni. How many here are familiar to some degree or another with the story of Narad Muni? Okay? Most people are. Okay. So I'm not going to be saying anything new. I'll just be repeating what's in the Bhagavatam. But I'll just be trying to share my realizations and hopefully that will inspire us in some way or another. And if not, if it's not inspiring, then at least we know that hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam purifies the heart no matter what, as long as we don't speculate on the messages. So, I will read one verse here. It's a really beautiful verse, verse 18. There's a kirtan playing back here.
रूपं भगवतो यत्तन् मनाकान्तं सुचापहं आपास्यान् सह सहसोत्थस्थे वैक्लव्यादुमना इव।
Translation: The transcendental form of the Lord, as it is, satisfies the mind's desire and at once erases all mental incongruities. Upon losing that form, I suddenly got up. Being perturbed, as is usual when one loses that which is desirable. And the purport, that the Lord is not formless is experienced by Narad Muni. But his form is completely different from all forms of our material experience. For the whole duration of our life, We go see different forms in the material world, but none of them is just apt to satisfy the mind, nor can any one of them vanish all perturbances of the mind. These are the special features of the transcendental form of the Lord. And one who has once seen that form is not satisfied with anything else. No form in the material world can any longer satisfy the seer. That the Lord is formless or impersonal means that he has nothing like a material form and is not like any material personality. As spiritual beings having eternal relations with that transcendental form of the Lord, we are, life after life, searching after that form of the Lord, and we are not satisfied by any other form of material appeasement. Narad Muni got a glimpse of this, but having not seen it again, he became perturbed and stood up all of a sudden to search it out. What we desire, life after life, was obtained by Narad Muni, and losing sight of him again was certainly a great shock for him. So, read the translation once again. The transcendental form of the Lord as it is satisfies the mind's desire and at once erases all mental incongruities. Upon losing that form, I suddenly got up, being perturbed, as is usual when one loses that which is desirable. So this is the conclusion, this is the ending point of Narad Muni's journey. And his journey started a long time ago. So this is the part of the journey where Narad Muni has seen God, but God, Krishna, disappears from his vision. And when Krishna disappears from his vision, he becomes a little bit disturbed. He says, just as somebody who has something valuable and loses that valuable thing becomes disturbed. If you, for example, I think the thing that we would all become disturbed by is if any one of us lost our iPhones or something, right? I think that's us losing our iPhone, I think, is equivalent to Narad Muni losing the sight of the Lord, right? Because we take darshan of our phones probably every like minute and a half or 2 minutes, and we just, if we don't take darshan of our phone for more than like 3 or 4 minutes, this deep hankering and separation develops. Tears start to flow from my eyes, right? And we feel all vacant in this world without the absence of our smartphone. We may feel a buzzing in our pocket. It may not even be a buzzing, but the mind tells us there's something buzzing. Check it, check it. Maybe there's that the president is calling. Someone is calling. You know, the favorite Hollywood or Bollywood actor must be on the phone. Look, look, who's there? So if we were to lose that all valuable phone, which has all our contacts, all our entire to-do list, what am I going to do tomorrow? I'm lost without the phone. If you don't have the phone, then you don't know what to do. Has all our bank account information and all our other passwords to a million and one different online sites that we're members of. What would we do, right? So just as we would be disturbed by losing that, so Narad Muni felt separation because he lost the vision of the Lord. But how did he gain the vision of the Lord? So in order to talk about how he gained the vision of the Lord, we have to go back in history a little bit. Now we're going to rewind to the beginning of the movie, so to speak, the Narad Muni story. So we know that Narad Muni was raised by his mother. And he was raised in an environment where he didn't know who his father was. It's explained that she was a simple servant. It's called here a maid servant. And Hare Krishna. So Narad Muni's mother was a simple maidservant. And they lived in a hermitage. And he didn't know who his father was. So basically, she raised him, in one sense, as a single parent. A single parent raising a child. But one thing that she did that was very, very important was that she made sure that whenever any great personalities came into the area, came to that hermitage, she made sure that her son served those great personalities. And this was probably the single most important thing she could have done. Single most important thing. Engaging the child in devotional service, engaging the child in serving the great souls. So Narad Muni was only 5 years old. He was only 5 years old, and at that early age, she started engaging him in serving the great devotees. And he explains that one time during the monsoon season, the 4 month of the Chaturmasya, when it rains nonstop, the monsoon season, that the great Bhaktivedantas came, very elevated individuals came to that hermitage. And when they came there, she basically asked him to serve them. She was also serving, but she also engaged her son in serving these great Mahatmas. And so he explains that as he began to serve them, he would all day long, he was able to hear them talking about the activities of the Supreme Lord. So he's getting the benefit of serving, and he's also getting the benefit of hearing. Hearing what? Hearing them talking about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So at a very early age, he was able to hear the pastimes of the Lord and serve the devotees. Now, who is he telling the story to? This is also important. He's telling the story to Srila Vyasadeva. And Srila Vyasadeva himself is going through a little bit of a confusion in life. You notice that a lot of our scriptures, or the two main ones that we study, talk about one of the main characters is people who are confused. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's Arjuna who's confused, doesn't know what he's supposed to do. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is a little bit confused about what he should do. And he's the one who divided all the Vedas. He divided the Vedas, and still he's confused as to what he should do. So Narad Muni explains to him that now you need to compile one scripture which will purely glorify God and do nothing else. It will glorify God and it will talk about pure devotional service. And pure devotional service means that when we're serving God, when we're serving Krishna, we're not asking for anything in return from Krishna. Because a lot of the Vedic texts, as you read the Vedic text, it prescribes certain sacrifices, certain activities that you can engage in, and those activities will give you some kind of ulterior benefit. Somehow, the gods will give you something in return, whether it's money, whether it's house, whether it's a good spouse or a promotion, something material you'll get in return. So, Narad Muni told Vyasadeva that it's important now to compile a set of scriptures, or one scripture, in which there is pure devotional service. That when the person reads that, all they will be inspired to do is get pure devotional service. So, as he's telling this to Vyasadeva, Narad Muni decides to tell his own story to Vyasadeva. Because, you know, if you tell the philosophy, that's one thing. But then you have to be able to give examples of people who have benefited from the philosophy. Right? Otherwise, it just remains theoretical. It just remains theoretical. If you just talk philosophy, but then you're thinking, well, okay, who's benefited from this philosophy? Are there any people who've benefited? So Narad Muni decides that he's going to tell his own story of how he benefited by engaging in pure devotional service. So he's explaining how he was serving the great Vaishnavas who came to the hermitage where he and his mother were residing, and how he was busy doing a few different things, taking prasadam, taking their remnants, their mahaprasad, hearing them speak Krishna katha constantly, and then also serving them in whatever simple ways he could serve as a five-year-old boy. And it's explained that then Vyasadeva asks him, so what did you do after these great Bhaktivedantas left? After they left your hermit, then what did you do? So Narad Muni explains that something very tragic happened actually in his life. Something very tragic happened. And he says that one time, my mother, he says, who loved me dearly, and because I was all she had, she bound me with the ropes of her affection. She bound me with her love, because that's all that she had. He says, one time my mother went out to milk a cow. And as she was milking a cow, she was bit by a serpent. And being bit by the serpent, she died. And at that moment, Narad Muni explains, I was able to see this, what just happened, this tragedy. I was able to see this tragedy in my mind as the mercy of God. Now, we don't want to misunderstand this. He wasn't happy that his mother had died. He wasn't celebrating or anything like that. But he saw it as mercy of God that now he had no one else to depend on. And so the only person he could depend on was God. He was forced to depend solely on God. And he decided that now I'm going to go and find God. Now it's interesting, this is a very, very important point, because as cruel as that may seem, but in order sometimes for us to surrender to God, a lot has to be taken away, unfortunately. When we have material benefits and material facilities, too often, when we have those things, we are not able to put our full faith and surrender into God. And that's a natural phenomena. Because we become dependent on the things that we have. Our mind tells us that I can solve my problems with the money that I have. I can solve my problems with the connections that I have in society and the family that I have. I can achieve whatever I want to with my own intelligence. I'm smart enough. I can figure things out. As long as we have these feelings, and as long as we have these facilities, things to depend on, to the degree we depend on things in this material world, to that degree we cannot depend on the mercy of God. So it's kind of like what happened with Draupadi, when she was being disrobed in the assembly. She was, I believe it was one of Lord Krishna's wives, I believe it might have been Satyabhama Rukmini, who asked him, why did you wait so long to help Draupadi? You know, then Krishna explained that first, she was trying to hold on to her sari with both of her hands and all of her strength. But then, she realized that now she had to call for help because she was going to lose, because it was Dushasan on the other side. So she let go with one hand and raised it to Krishna. But still one hand she was holding on to the sari. And then finally when she realized she's about to lose, now no choice, whether she held on or not, he was going to win. At that moment, she threw both of her hands up. Full surrender. And when both hands went up, then Krishna provided the unlimited sari. So, many times in our life, we have to come to a very helpless point before we actually fully surrender to Lord Krishna. And this is something that Queen Kunti also says, the same exact thing she says. She says that one who has material opulence, wealth, beauty, strength, and a good family lineage. She's saying this while she's looking at Lord Krishna. Krishna is leaving for Dwarka. He's on the chariot. She's standing there looking at him. And she said, my Lord, people who have these things, wealth, beauty, opulences, strength, and family, these people usually cannot pray to you with sincere feeling. It's not that they can't pray. They pray. But the feeling isn't sincere. And maybe there's some sincerity there, but the depth isn't there. Because afterwards, you go home, you got your family, your house, and your car, and your job, everything is there. The bank balance, it's all there. How deep, just like if you're not thirsty at all, if you just drank a glass of water, will you ask for water? You won't. It's just there's no need for it. So that's how we are. Until we have a need, we don't call out to God. So when God sees that, oh, this person wants to call out to me, but unfortunately, this person's surrounded by so many things that's preventing this person from calling out to me, now let me become Hari, one who takes away. He sees that we want to call out, but we can't because we've got these things, crutches. You know when you have a broken leg and you get a crutch from the hospital? So all of these opulences are crutches. We lean on them. And the more of these things we have, the more difficult it is for us to really call out from that desperation place. Desperation like Draupadi. Can you imagine that desperation? Being humiliated in front of all the men, prominent men in the kingdom. Worst thing for her. She would have killed herself after that, actually. If that would have happened, she would have killed herself. Nothing more for her to live for. So Narad Muni was in a similar situation. He didn't have the father. The father wasn't around. The mother had died. There was no one else to look after. And he didn't have a family. That was it. He was alone now. In this situation when he was alone and desperate and scared, he was able to really turn himself towards God. And now how does a five-year-old have the conviction to do that? Do we have any five-year-old children here? No? You're six. So imagine someone younger than her, right? Walking through the jungle seeking out God, right? Imagine that for a moment. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. How is that really possible? It's possible because of what he had done. And what had he done? He had served the great Bhaktivedantas. And he walked, and so he got the faith. He said earlier to Vyasadeva that because of my association with them, their nature became attractive to me. Means that who they were, he wanted to be. He wanted to become like them. You know, like children and even adults, but especially children, when they see a great personality, they want to be like that person. Usually, children want to be like their parents, and then maybe they get into sports or music and things, and there's like an athlete that they really like, or there's a musician who sings really well, and they want to be like that, or an actor, or who knows, you know, some prominent figure in society. And then they start acting like that. They start talking like that. Maybe they start dressing like that, right? So they start emulating that individual. And they even develop the consciousness of that individual to some degree. In some small way, they become that person. So Narad Muni, his all-star team was those Bhaktivedantas. And he wanted to become like them. And he really absorbed their consciousness. And they were fully dedicated to talking about Krishna and serving the Lord. And so he immediately had that this is my goal of life now. There's no one else to protect me. The goal of my life is now to seek out God, to look for God. And so he decides that he is going to walk north and find God. And it's explained that as he's walking, he goes through beautiful gardens, beautiful areas where there's gold and all kinds of precious jewels, minerals. He also goes through very scary places like forests and jungles. He explains which are the playground of jackals and snakes and dangerous animals. But he keeps walking. Imagine. We couldn't survive one night in the jungle, right? What to speak of a five-year-old child? Even as adults, if you know you're alone in the house and there's like some strange noise that you haven't heard, That's it. It's over. You know, your mind's just like driving you nuts at that moment. You're not sure if you should go look and see. Maybe you just want to lock the door. You're not sure what it was. The mind's just completely driving you crazy. And this is in the comfort of our own home. He's walking through the forest. I remember when I was little, even now, I don't like to be alone in big places, you know? It's kind of scary. So, as you know, we're like that a little bit. And he's walking fearlessly. Where did he get that fearlessness from? From those Bhaktivedantas. Because they always walk from town to town and village to village, through the forest, fearless. But because he was associating with them, he basically absorbed their fearlessness. It's really incredible what you're able to absorb from another person. The kind of consciousness we can absorb from another person is really phenomenal. So that's why it's so important to be thoughtful and careful of who we associate with and what we're associating with. What is the consciousness of the person that we're associating with? Because we will become like that person. And if we like that person, we'll become like them. And if we dislike that person, we will also become like that. Because you're just thinking about those qualities that you either like or dislike. And we will develop those qualities ourselves. So Narad Muni, also like I mentioned earlier, he passes through gardens and villages and towns. You know, there could have been a temptation. Oh, this is a nice town. Maybe somebody will want to take care of me here. I'm just a little boy. Maybe I can find someone to care for me, right? That's what children want. They always want attention. That's it. Number one thing, they want attention. And if they don't get it, they cry and they're miserable. If they get it, then they're happy. And they need protection. If they're an hour or two, if mom and dad aren't there, the children can get scared and panic. So he could have been tempted to stay in one of the towns and villages. And maybe an adult here will take care of me. Maybe some family will give me shelter. But his confidence and his faith was so deep that he kept walking. He kept walking and walking and walking. It's explained that at one point, he decided to stop. He said, "Thus traveling, I felt tired, both bodily and mentally. And I was both thirsty and hungry. So I took a bath in a river and also drank water. By contacting water, I got relief from my exhaustion." And then he sat under a banyan tree and decided that now I'm going to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he sat down and closed his eyes and began to meditate on the Lord within the heart. And then he says that as soon... Okay, everybody with me still? Haven't lost anybody? Okay. So as soon as I began to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord, my mind transformed in transcendental love and tears rolled down my eyes. And without delay, the personality of God, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. So he said, immediately, tears came to my eyes. And the Lord appeared on the lotus of my heart. Now imagine, immediately. He sits down, meditates, and immediately he gets it. How long have we been chanting, right? That's a question that we can ask ourselves. How long have we been chanting and not a single tear has come down this eye? This eye is as dry as the desert. And it says, my heart transformed. Of course, this is Krishna's choice. This is Krishna's supremely independent will. He gave this mercy to Narad Muni. And of course, that mercy he received because of service to their great soul. So we understand the importance of service. That actually, unless we're doing some kind of service, advancement becomes very difficult. Actually, advancement becomes very difficult. It's kind of like, you know, theory will help us. Gyan will help us to some degree. But ultimately, until we engage in service, that gyan will not become vigyan. It will not become realized knowledge. It's like studying the philosophy of yoga and then doing yoga. They're two different things. But in order to do it, you have to study it. But you can't just study it and say, oh, I feel so much flexible after reading this whole book. Wow, this is great. I'm going to read it all over again. No. You can't qualify to become a yoga teacher after just studying the philosophy of yoga. No, you have to do yoga. That anything. You could study a driver's manual, how to drive, when to stop, how to... But until you get behind the wheel and drive, you realize a whole different thing. Right? So everything has the theory and then the practical. So him, the practical, for us, the practical is actually serving. Finding some service to the community, to the devotees, to the temple, and engaging in that. Steadily doing some service. Of course, chanting is service, taking care of our families is also service. Whatever we can do, whatever we can do here and there, try to increase a little bit gradually at a healthy pace. It's only for our benefit, actually. That's all. And then, an interesting thing happened. When he saw the Supreme Lord in his heart, he became so excited, so thrilled. That was the verse I read earlier. Being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened. Every part of his body became like enlivened. Being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy, I could not see both myself and the Lord. He went into so much ecstasy that the vision of the Lord disappeared. Oops. Oops. So, and then he jumped up. He got up. And that's when he says, I suddenly got up, being perturbed, as is usual when one loses that which is desirable. Right? So we talked about how, going back in the beginning, we said, you know, if you were to like lose your iPhone, how perturbed you would be. In case we can't relate to how disturbed Narad Muni was, maybe we can understand how disturbed he was by understanding how we would be if we lost our phone or our car or something like that. So, of course, there's no comparison, but I'm just bringing up things that I think we're most attached to probably. So, he got up and the Lord was not there because the Lord was in his heart. He saw the Lord in his heart, actually. He got up and the Lord wasn't there anymore. And then he sat back down and tried to see the Lord again. He went into the same meditation, tried to see the Lord, couldn't see the Lord. Tried and tried and tried, nothing happened. And then the Lord felt compassion for him and said, Narada, I have some news for you. Said, unfortunately, in this life, you will not be able to see me again because you are incomplete in service. Now, Narad Muni could have said, okay, God, this is too much now, you know. First, my father's not there. Second, my mother's gone. I'm walking through the forest. Now I finally see you, and now you tell me this. How much bad news are you going to give me? Nowadays, we'd say, all right, I'm going to become an atheist. I don't believe in God. Too many bad things are happening in my life. Forget it. There's no God, right? People do that. People do that. When things go too difficult, then we sometimes turn away from God, turn against God, blame God, and get angry. And I think that to some degree, that can be a normal human emotion. We can't deny that. That could be a normal human emotion to get angry, especially if you had faith. We're getting some special effects from the Supreme Lord here, or maybe just the electricity. So, you know, it could be a very normal human emotion, but then that's when we need the spiritual philosophy to understand that that's not the right thing to do. Initially, there may be frustration and anger and all of these things, but really we have to use the spiritual philosophy to understand that, you know, that we can't be blaming God for every little thing that's going wrong in our life. At some point, we kind of have to take responsibility. And, you know, why this story is so, I really like this story so much. I have 5 minutes left, so I will share a little bit of my own journey and connect it to why this story is so powerful for me. Because we saw that how Narad Muni turned to the Lord when things got difficult for him. And a similar thing happened to me in my life. I grew up in Southern California in Los Angeles. And growing up, at a certain point, my parents, going from having not much at all, developed a very, very successful jewelry business, literally a multi-million-dollar jewelry business. And I had a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Gita, and I would try to read it, but it wouldn't make any sense to me. Meaning that I couldn't relate to it. I would look at it, I'd just close it and put it back on the shelf. Somehow nothing there made sense. It didn't seem like a relevant text. The Sanskrit, the English, it just, too much. I was busy having too much fun in LA. You know, weather's always warm. You can always go to the beach. You can always go outside, do what you want. So I was busy having fun. So several times I tried to look at the Gita. Didn't make sense. I think I went to the temple once with my parents. I don't even know if I went inside. I just remember standing outside, actually. So that was my frame of mind. But at one point, my parents lost their business completely, like zero. We lost everything. And at that time, we ended up moving to, for a couple of years, it's a long and crazy story, to East Europe, right after some of East Europe was coming out of communism. I went to Bulgaria for 2 years. And we left our home, no more money, no cars, no business, nothing, living in Bulgaria, very confused about where I was going, like literally had been stripped of everything in one sense. But I had the Gita with me, and I started reading the Bhagavad Gita at that time. And finally, and it actually made sense to me. Because like Arjuna, he had gone through something very difficult. Imagine Arjuna, he's going through a complete bewilderment in front of everybody. Such an embarrassing situation for such a confident and accomplished person. And when I was all alone, 21, sitting there in Bulgaria, nobody speaks English. There's nothing, I couldn't talk to anyone. It was a crazy time. The country was in this turmoil, upside down. And that's when the Bhagavad Gita started to make sense to me. And of course, spent 2 crazy years in Bulgaria. And then we decided to move to New Jersey, from LA to Bulgaria to New Jersey. And after working as a loan officer in a mortgage company for a couple of years and other things, I finally decided to go to an ashram in Bombay in 1999. I went there for 1 month just for a little retreat to get away from everything, reflect, meditate, pray, figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, where my life was going. And 14 years have gone by since that happened. And I've actually going to make a shameless plug here before the curtains open. I wrote a book about my journey. It's called Urban Monk. It covers my entire journey from growing up in this country to until I moved into an ashram and the work I do at Columbia University and New York University at the moment as a Hindu chaplain. So thank you all very much. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Tiger Pimanandi.